The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
Well, we are here, and I am here with Dr. Justin Ram, a director in economics. And this is going to be an insightful conversation just for you. And alongside me, I have no other than Farida Lee.
Good afternoon, everyone. It's so good to be here. We should have an eventful afternoon speaking with Dr. Ram. Dr. Ram is a director of economics at the Caribbean Development Bank. His specializations are in energy development and economics and development economics. So we don't have anybody ordinary here today. We have special people.
You're totally right.
Dr. Ram, what are your impressions in terms of a bird's eye view to begin with of what you've read so far from the presentation by Minister Tanku?
Well, first of all, thank you very much for having me, and it's my pleasure to be here with you. Just to correct you, I'm no longer Director of Economics at the Caribbean Development Bank. I'm now an independent consultant advising governments across the region. Well, to answer your question, first of all, of course, the budget presentation just ended, and you know, I've been trying to scramble to see what are some of the major initiatives that the Minister of Finance has already proposed. My first impression of it, I guess it is a deficit budget, as the Prime Minister had said a few weeks ago that's what it was going to be.
Right.
But one of the good initiatives that the Minister of Finance has also said is that he will be implementing fiscal rules. This, I think, is something very important for the people of Trinidad and Tobago to understand, because you really need fiscal constraint in order to manage your budget well when you're operating in a small open economy. So I'm very pleased to see that. Another major thing that I've come out of this budget is a significant expenditure that's going to be going to Tobago. The Minister of Finance is actually giving 5% of the budget to Tobago to manage its affairs. But beyond that, he also mentioned about $700 million of ministerial expenditures outside of that 5% that will be going to Tobago. So Tobago is actually getting very much a lion's share of this. Now, I can only hope that these expenditures would go towards building the tourism product and improving the infrastructure of Tobago. Because ultimately, when we're speaking about diversification, and the Minister of Finance did hint at this, tourism is going to have to play a very important role. And it's more than just an important role with respect to visitors coming and spending foreign exchange in the country. If we are considering becoming a more productive economy in terms of producing more agricultural products, because I saw in the budget he also provided incentives for greater domestic agricultural production and agro-processing. Tourism, if you think about it, if visitors are coming to your shores every day, your market size increases every day.
Right.
And so you're able to get the types of economies of scale that we don't necessarily have in a small open economy like ours. So I think those things go hand in hand. Minister,
With regards to tourism, the minister mentioned about a tourism boost, and he stated that we will develop new products in the medical, sport, and cultural tourism sectors, facilitate the completion of hotels including Four Points, Hampton Inn at Maracas Bay, and advance Tobago's Marriott and Elephant Tree resorts. Now, the visitor experience will be modernized through secure cashless payments and improve connectivity. Now, why is this sounding good from here? When a tourist arrive to Tobago, even Trinidad, you know, I expect, and this is just me, and I'm thinking from a tourist perspective, yes, the cashless thing is okay, that's fine. But when I go there, I want to feel safe. I want to be able to be comfortable wherever I am at. And yes, Maracas Bay, okay, but I also want to feel safe in Maracas Bay. So whilst I get what the minister is saying here, there's a lot to be imagined or determined of what is going to happen when a tourist comes here. Is it going to be the same? So to me, how I see this, this doesn't really do anything for me as a tourist.
Well, I guess it's what I would say is that the budget seems to be signaling the right, I guess, direction for us as the people of Trinidad and Tobago, in the right direction for the economy. Now, I guess the devil is in the detail, as you're saying. So it's about what is the total tourism package, as it were, from the moment somebody, before they even land in Trinidad and Tobago, what is it going to be like when they start to board that plane in New York or in Raleigh, North Carolina, or Berlin, Germany? And then when they arrive here, do they still have to fill out a paper-based form, for example? When most places you go now, you don't have to do that.
Right.
So I would imagine that the Minister of Finance, working with his other ministerial colleagues, will seek to make this a lot more, a lot better experience for tourists. He also said that they're going to be encouraging many more direct flights from North America to Tobago, which is a good thing. I've often wondered why we didn't do that before, because really, when you think about it, CAL should have had many more flights from North America going directly to Tobago, because that's ultimately where the visitors want to go. I mean, the diaspora, of course, want to come to Port of Spain and to Trinidad. But of course, when you're thinking about the tourism product, you need to have that direct connection.
Yeah.
Now, I think it's really, as I said, it's really the devil is in the detail here. And what's going to have to happen is that we're going to have to see what's the real implementation plan for the tourism product.
Right.
Okay, he's spoken about sports, he's spoken about cultural, maybe even ecotourism is going to be important here. We have a lot to offer as a tourism destination, but how do you now package that and ensure that it is something that visitors are going to want to come? Now, I think we have an advantage because we're going to become this new destination, as it were.
Right.
And, you know, people have visited all over the world, have visited many other islands in the Caribbean before. If we can do this correctly, I think it can work well.
Right.
And as I said before, if we're able now to build the backward linkages with the rest of the economy, agriculture, manufacturing, then that's a win-win for us, something that the other Caribbean islands can't do because they don't have those other sectors that they can rely on. If you think about the other tourism sectors in other islands, they're mainly using imported goods to supply the tourists who might be staying in the hotels.
Right.
You know, so the tourists might be eating imported fruits, for example. While here in Trinidad and Tobago, we can have tourists eating more of our local produce and therefore expanding the overall take from the tourism product. So I think it's the right direction, but as I said, the devil is in the detail.
Yes.
And I guess what we have to look forward to is perhaps some type of tourism plan that details how this is going to be rolled out and what the implementation plan is going to look like.
So let me ask you about the tourism boost. What do you expect? Because, I mean, we are fresh off the plane, no pun intended, with the budget. But what are you expecting in the coming days with regards to tourism? Like to see?
What would I like to see?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I certainly would like to see, so the Minister of Finance has said that, I mean, in the second quarter of 2026, we're going to see the actual operationalization of the new ANR Robinson airport in Tobago. That's, I think, it's certainly something I want to see, because that's going to signal that we are serious about welcoming tourists to Tobago, our major tourism destination. But I think I also want to see and ensure that the Minister of Finance and the Minister responsible for Agriculture, Minister responsible for Trade and Industry, are also working in tandem. So I'd like to see a holistic plan for tourism that is not only about the visitor experience, but also seeing how we intend to link other parts of the economy to this new tourism product that we intend to go after.
Nice.
So that more of the foreign exchange that is spent in tourism actually stays here in Trinidad and Tobago rather than being leaked as it happens in other parts of the Caribbean.
Yes. Well, thank you so much, Mr. Ram, Dr. Ram, can I call you that?
Yes.
So, guys, if you're now joining us, it's just about 5:31, Carrie VAC, I'm in the company, and I'm alongside Fareed Ali, and we are here with Dr. Justin Ram. He's an economist, a consultant, that is, and we are having post-discussions. I know you have questions. Give me a call, 625-2257 or 627-3223. Fareed, tell us, what do you think about the presentation?
Dr. Ram, if I may ask, when we look at the money that is allocated to different sectors You mentioned the huge allocation that Tobago got. We have to look at where the money could be generated in terms of fiscal policy, in terms of measures that the state is putting in place. Custom duties on alcohol, I'm reading that it went from $79.25 to $158.50. Beer went from $5.14 to $10.28. Cigarettes per pack of 20 from $5.26 to $10.52. What does that mean? What exactly does that spell for the man on the street who's listening to us there? Because these are, from where I stand, these are essential products. And regardless of what the price is, the smoker and the drinker is going to buy. Is it that the state is mindful of the fact that we have certain items? So if we step out of that realm, you know, doubles is a product that people eat. Mm-hmm. So likewise, on a parallel footing, cigarettes and alcohol, people consume. What implications does that tweaking of figures or that measure put in place there, how does that impact the man on the street?
Well, quite simply, as you know, the demand for some of these products are quite inelastic. So it doesn't matter what the price is, you're still going to have people demanding them. But what it means for the man in the street who consumes those particular products, it means that a higher proportion of their budget is now going to go to the consumption of those things. Now, everybody has a choice. If you want to consume alcohol, you might decide, well, I'm no longer going to consume the alcohol with that actually has, you know, higher rate of duties, and probably start to consume the ready to drink products line. You know, for example, I can see that, for example, there's going to be an increase in consumption of products that are ready to drink rather than in, for example, the imported whiskey So there is an implication for the man in the street where his budget is going to be impacted by this. But what's going to likely happen is we're probably going to have some substitution effects where people might consider consuming other types of products. Now, at a macro level, I'm not sure how much additional revenue the government is likely to collect from this, because at the end of the day, this is still a deficit budget. And what we really would like to see is how the government plans to actually close this deficit over the next 5 years. That's going to be quite critical. And it's not going to come about by simply taxing alcohol more and taxing cigarettes. Mm. There's going to have to be eventually a rationalization of some expenditures.
Right.
Where that happens, well, we wait to see. Yeah. But I guess the Minister of Finance, and he says that what he really wants to see is a return to growth of the economy. So I imagine he is hoping to grow himself out of this problem that we have currently, which is a constant deficits over many years, which has added to our high levels of indebtedness. So I imagine the Minister of Finance is hoping that we would start to see growth, and therefore you would start to see an expansion in revenues over the next 5 years or so. But again, it all depends on the details, which of course you're not going to hear from just this budget speech. We have to go into a lot more details as to some of the other interventions that the Minister of Finance has said. Now, one thing I want to say, and one thing I was very happy to hear about in this budget, is that the Minister of Finance indicated his willingness to review the value-added taxation system. For anyone who runs a business in Trinidad and Tobago knows how onerous the process is to file VAT returns. And when you have to get a VAT return from the government, it can take years for that to happen, meaning that in effect, you are giving the government an interest-free loan. And that's not good for business. And the Minister of Finance has said that he's willing to look at perhaps removing value-added tax and replacing it by a simple sales tax, which of course would be on everything perhaps at a much lower rate, but meaning that it is not onerous to administer. It's going to be quite easy. I think that was a step in the right direction and could possibly increase revenues for the government in the long term if it is done correctly. Yes. Mm.
Would you say that by sleight of hand, the Minister of Finance have given the impression that he's putting more in the hands of the citizens out there, but in in another way he's taking from, because I'm seeing that with regard to commercial rates for electricity, commercial and industrial rates appear to have been to have risen by some 0.05 cents per kilowatt. So on the one hand, when you reduce the price of gas by $1, super, mm-hmm. And then you increase electricity by 0.05 cents, it carries the impression by focusing on the $1 decrease in the price of super that so much has been given, mm-hmm. but they are actually finding another way, meaning the state finding another way to make that to compensate for the money for the subsidy that they just extended.
Mm. Mm. Yes, I mean, without a doubt, the government has to try to balance its books. It's not doing that right now, but where it's giving on the one hand, it's probably taking back with the other. Now, I would say that the $1 reduction in the price of a liter of super gasoline is perhaps a direct benefit to many people, yes? Mm-hmm. But when you have the increase in electricity, for example, for commercial enterprises, that's going to be something of a indirect cost to
cost
them.
To, right,
because
yeah.
businesses will probably, over time, then transfer those costs to consumers. But again, consumers have the choice as to where they spend their money. And I think I want to say this to your audience, that people now have to think about how they spend their dollars. Am I going to spend my money on something that has gone up in price, or can I try to find alternatives where the prices have not gone up, or whereby maybe businesses might now try to be competitive because now they have an increase in one factor, in the cost of one factor. Can they now find areas of competitiveness to improve the overall price of their products that they sell to the final consumer? So now, besides the price of gas going up and the going down, and of course the cost of electricity going up at commercials, the minister also mentioned that the price of LPG, I think 100 pounds and above, is also likely to increase as well. However, they've maintained the subsidy on smaller cylinders. So I think it's a 25 pound, the smaller cylinders that people tend to have in their homes and attach directly to their stoves. Mm-hmm. But the larger cylinders have now had a reduction in their subsidy. And we're probably going to see some impact of that as well. Now, I think it's really important that the audience understands that we have had a situation in Trinidad and Tobago where we have had subsidized energy for quite a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And there is going to be a time when we can't afford all of these subsidies.
Right.
Now, blanket subsidies that is where everybody benefits from. What I think, and I really hope that the Minister of Finance will start to look at this, is that what we really need are targeted interventions for people who really need help.
Right.
Because, for example, the subsidies, the people who benefit most from the subsidies from energy products are actually the wealthy,
mm-hmm.
because those are the ones who have the large vehicles, who have the air conditions on in their houses, mm-hmm. all day, benefiting from these subsidies, while at the lower end of the spectrum, with respect to the lower income households, they are not benefiting enough. Those are the people who actually need some direct support. And we have people in society who can bear the burden of the correct market price for these products. And eventually, I think we're going to have to move towards that. Maybe the Minister of Finance will do that over time. But I think over time, if we're going to reduce the level of deficit that we have in the budget,
mm-hmm.
it's imperative that we get on top of the transfers and subsidies that are spent by every government year after year. And I think the best way to do that is to reduce the overall subsidy level, but target the interventions for those most in need.
Yes, I gotcha. So guys, let's get into the conversation. Give us a call at 625-2257 or 627-3223. I know my lines were lighting up. Yeah. Give us a call. We are here with Dr. Justin Ram, an economist. Based on what you heard from the presentation of this, the 2025 to 2026 fiscal budget allocations. And yeah, that's what we're talking about. And let me give you a reminder of what was allocated to which ministry. So for education and training, $8.766 billion. Health, $8.214 billion. National security, $6.366 billion. Public utilities, $3.395 billion. Infrastructure, $1.943 billion. Rural development and local government, $1.807 billion. Transport, $1.840 billion. Agriculture is $1.130 billion. And housing, $0.662 billion. Let's take this phone call. Let's hear who's there. 625-2257. Hello, good evening. All right, try us back. 625-2257 or 627-3223. Now, Dr. Ram, this, I mean, every budget, we always see education and training. Between them and security, most budgets. But something that I always ask every year and every July, August, and every vacation, we always seeing some issues with regards to schools and the infrastructure and this and fix and that. We have problems. Now, this year, I must say, and I really need to say this, we did not hear the protests as before. So tell me what you think about the allocation and what do you look forward to, you know, into actually making our school system and even the infrastructure much better when it comes to this budget?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And this year we didn't see the issues because, of course, they pushed back the opening of the school term by a week to give them an opportunity to get the schools ready for the actual opening of the school term. Now, I think that when we think about education, when we think about health, the real reforms are not really around expenditure. Yeah, because we can spend a lot of money on new schools, improving the infrastructure. But what about the curriculum? Now, I think that that's where the rubber really hits the road. What are the plans that the government has to improve the curriculum for the new type of economy that we need? And let me just say that I think this is where I've always had a problem with these types of budget speeches. And why I believe that they are no longer fit for purpose. So the Minister of Finance is coming out and speaking to us maybe for about almost 4 hours, really. But what's the overall vision of this? Mm-hmm. And that I think is lacking to some extent, because if we know what the vision is, then we can really make an assessment as to where the expenditures should be going and what the priorities should be. So when you speak about education, if the Minister of Finance said, okay, here's where I want the economy to be, and here are some of the milestones that I think we need to achieve this, and therefore here is the type of education that we need to be providing to our children and to our adults who constantly need retraining now in this global environment to get their skills up to speed. We're unable, I think, to make that assessment just simply looking at about $8.8 billion for education and training. Again, we need to know the details.
You're playing for me in my morning into dancing. You've cut off my cycle.
The empirical for imperative for us to do is that we need to have a vision over the next 5 years as to where we want our country to be, and therefore what's the budget allocations and the budget process going to be for the next 5 years, and then every year what this budget statement should be is a review of what happened the year before and what we're going to be doing differently if we have not achieved our targets. So when it comes to education, when it comes to health, when it comes to security, these numbers mean very little unless I know what the government is actually planning to do with it and how it actually intends to be accountable for what it says it's going to do and what they are meant to do with these levels of expenditure. So again, just coming back to the question, I think when it comes to education, the major area here has to be around curriculum and education reform rather than just amounts that are being spent on infrastructure for schools.
Yes. Now, Fareed, before we get to your question, let's take this phone call. I saw someone there waiting. Let's hear who's there. Good afternoon.
Hey, Carrie, how are you?
Hey, love, I'm good. What's happening?
And to your honorable guest here.
Yes.
Well, I got to get you up with the gas immediately. Examine the gas. All right? I started there.
All right.
The other benefits coming out. I suppose that when the ministers are speaking, they will, for example, give you the vote, how much you go to capital expenditure and how much to reach current expenditure.
Mm.
My stress on this, I want to see that how they explain the expenditure. That's what you're looking for with this new pardon?
Yep.
Yeah, the paradigm shift.
Right.
So that paradigm shift from we ought to have now total accountability and transparency how they spend the money. That's my what I'm looking at. The better is there, the minister said what they're going to do, but I want to see transparency and accountability. Every cent spent by every minister,
right,
they have to account to us how they spend the money. And you must see what we are getting for the money.
I got you.
Comment to that, Mr. Ram.
Mm-hmm. But, all right, buddy, I got you. Thanks so much. What's your thoughts on his statement?
I think the caller is spot on, and that's what we need to see now. So the Minister of Finance and I guess those who are coming again for the remainder of this budget debate need to explain to us, okay, what are the types of targets and what they intend to achieve with these levels of expenditures, and then next year report to us as to what has happened with respect to this money. And if something has not been achieved, tell us, okay, how they expect to change the course of action to ensure that these targets are achieved in the next fiscal year, so that ultimately we're able to see at the end of 5 years where the government wants us to be at the end of this parliament. I think that's going to be important. I think the caller is really spot on. It's the level of accountability has to happen. And I just want to say that it's all about implementation.
Right.
How the government implements is going to be critical. Because again, every year we hear great promises and then the budget speech happens next year and nobody accounts to us about what happened the year before.
And this is the challenge that I've been having for a very long time. How are we to hold them accountable? Because if you tell me, and guys, I'm just saying this, right? If you tell me, Carrie V, every time you're going to the city of Port of Spain to do whatever you need to do to help the economy, to help the country, you're getting $2, right? If you tell me that and you don't give that to me, how am I going to hold them accountable? Because you promised me, because this is what it is, you know. I promise that, you know, you will get this. I promise you will get that. So how are we holding them accountable? And that is the problem that I'm having. Because they would come, they would say these things, and then, you know, maybe next year sometime you say, but wait now, and we were supposed to get X, and we were supposed to get Y, so where is that disparity?
Well, again, this is where I think the Prime Minister plays a critical role, because ultimately the buck stops with the Prime Minister.
Mm.
And the Prime Minister is hopefully setting targets for her individual ministers to say, okay, I need you to say to the population, this is what you are going to achieve, and if you do not achieve it, then you are accountable to me, and then I decide what happens.
Right.
Maybe I'll have a cabinet reshuffle, or perhaps go to the population and say, this is why this was not achieved, and then to make the necessary adjustments. I think in a mature democracy, and I think we're becoming a mature democracy, that's the type of level of engagement and accountability that we need to see. But again, let me just highlight this. All of these great plans will not happen without a proper implementation plan.
Right.
And that proper implementation plan includes a new level of transparency and level of accountability, not only to the Prime Minister and high-level ministers, but ultimately to us as citizens of Trinidad and Tobago, the ultimate stakeholders in this. That's going to have to happen. And I think on a regular basis, besides just an annual budget statement, the Prime Minister needs to report to us as to how things are progressing and what she is going to be doing along with her cabinet colleagues to make changes if things are not going in the right direction. Because ultimately, look, we know how things happen. The world is uncertain. Things are going to happen, and the Prime Minister is going to have to make changes in real time. You know, she's going to have to change the wheels on the bus while it's in motion.
Mm.
These are things that happen in any setting with respect to governance in a dynamic world economy at this point in time.
Right.
And so we understand that. But please, just communicate with us. That level of accountability via communication is going to be critical for us going forward.
Yes, and I agree. Farid?
The Heritage and Stabilization Fund in the past 10 years have been severely depleted. From the data that is placed in the public space, it's been depleted by half. One economists indicated that whatever money we make from oil and gas, let us say that Dragon Gas situation with Venezuela bears fruit, that money should be channeled into rebuilding the Heritage and Stabilization Fund in terms of building reserves for the future, given where we are. The stress has now been and has been, we've been pointed in the direction of generating asset base and generating money to pay our bills through the non-energy sector. How do you perceive, if it is you are sitting in government now and you have to make decisions to grow this economy in the next five, over the course of the next 5 years to service debt, what are the areas you would focus on? What would you do?
Okay. So before I get to that, let me just come back to your point around the HSF, the Heritage and Stabilization Fund. Fundamentally, the rules of deposit need to be changed. Currently, any Minister of Finance can game the rules and not make any deposits. That should not be allowed. What should happen is that there should always be a proportion based on production. So not based on price, based on production. So we should always say maybe 10% of the revenues associated with 10% of the level of production of oil and natural gas must be deposited into the HSF. Okay? So I think that's what we have to do now, because particularly we're coming to a point where we are depleting down our reserves of oil and natural gas. Unless we find new discoveries, very soon we're not going to have any more gas or oil to exploit. But again, that brings us back to your second point, where I think the time for us to focus on what is going to be required to grow this economy. Now, I think now there's something called the Special Economic Zone facilities here in Trinidad and Tobago, which seeks to incentivize production of domestic manufacturing and domestic production. Right now, it's the process of becoming a special economic zone is very onerous. But if you manage to get in there, it can be quite beneficial. I think, why not turn this entire economy into a special economic zone and make it easy for producers to produce in Trinidad and Tobago and make it more difficult for people to import? So I want to make it clear here that really what we need to start doing is to start producing more. When we start producing more, it means that we have the ability to give our people better paid jobs. When they have better paid jobs, they can take care of their households. It means that we don't have to rely on the government for transfers and subsidies for people to take care of their households, meaning that the deficit will be reduced and therefore our overall level of indebtedness will be reduced. Now, you can only get there if we transform this economy from one of consumption to one of production. And I think the way to do this is to consider the entire economy almost like a special economic zone. Now, when I what do I mean by that? If we target persons and companies, including locals, foreign direct investment, who are going to make investments in Trinidad and Tobago, then they should have a corporation tax rate that encourages investment. So again, the fiscal needs to be changed to encourage more investment, because ultimately we need to start encouraging people to invest here and to produce more. And then, of course, there are other things that have to go along with that, ensuring that our education curricula is in line with a production economy.
Yes.
So things like that are going to be quite critical.
All right, I got you. Now, we're just about 5 minutes away from the top, and this is where we'll have to kind of wrap up our interview, because after that we have so much more coming up. Before you go, Dr. Ram, my previous guest, I asked her, what was her overall thoughts on the budget? And I wanted her to rate it out of 10 for me. So based on what you heard and based on what you're seeing and based on your understanding, give us a rating out of 10. Well, how would you rate it, the 2025-2026 fiscal budget?
Well, just from the high-level numbers that I've seen and the some of the new initiatives, I'd probably give it a 7. I'd probably give it a 7. So I think there is still significant room for improvement. I really want to know what the government plans to do to improve the overall level of competitiveness of this economy and to make this a production economy. We need to start producing and consuming more of what we produce and exporting more as well, and ultimately stop importing as much as we do, particularly when it comes to food and agriculture. There's so much that this country can be producing and consuming what it produces that I think I really want to see us push in that direction.
Right.
But again, I want to see the investment climate of this country transformed into one where when anyone looks at Trinidad and Tobago, they can say, okay, that's a great place to put my money because it's a great place to grow, mm-hmm. and I will have great returns on my investment. Right. I'm not quite seeing that as yet. Hopefully those are the plans in the works that the Minister of Finance will reveal to us in time. Mm,
in time. So it's something that we can look forward to. Anything before we go, Fareed, for Dr. Ram really quickly? Anything else you'd like to ask him?
When we look at the, in closing, a quick remark. The heavy weather was made of the 10% increase in public servant salary. It has been stated in the budget that they're looking to apply that increase to the year 2014, 2016, 2016, 2019, thereabout. So it's not an immediate increase. I think the impression the public had is that they're going to get that, public servants going to reap that 10% right away.
Well, let me just kind of explain that to you. So how negotiations go is on a periodic basis. So it'd be 14 to 16 and then 17 to 19. So based on when they go back to the CPO, then they will let them know how that is going to be paid. Because remember, we are already in 2025. So it's not that you could go back to 2019. So what they would do, it would be like a retro. So let's say, for instance, in 2026, the CPO say, well, all right, cool, negotiations is finished. What they would do is backdated. Mm-hmm. So that is how that's how it will go. So they will get it, actually. Immediately, they will get it in a bulk. So we don't know how the CPO would break down that 10%, but only when they go around the table to negotiate, then they will know if you're getting 2% in the year 14 to 16 or in 2014, 2% in 2015, like that now. Yes. So it will break down like that. So, well, it's time for us to go. We got to go for our 6 p.m. news headlines. I want to thank you so much, Dr. Ram, for joining us.
Thank you.
And of course, we're going to have you back again.
Yes,
okay?
I appreciate
so
that.
So stick and stay. Thank you so much, guys.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.